Alive and Kicking
with Claire McKenna.
Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
This is News Talk.
You're welcome along to Alive and Kicking with me, Claire McKenna. And I am serious. Do let me know how you are. I mean, I suppose it's early enough on a Sunday morning, but I'd like to hear your initial thoughts about how you are as you wake up. The good, the bad, the ugly, get it in. 53106 is the text number. It'll cost you 30 cents. If you've more to say, you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com or you can bombard me with how you're feeling on Instagram and Twitter. I'm at Claire's Lair. Coming up, performance nutritionist for the Dublin Senior Footballers and Leinster Rugby, Daniel Day, will be telling me why the right food choices can improve health and performance for anybody. Now, the clocks go back next weekend and we do all think with this one anyway, yay, it's an extra hour in bed. But is changing our clocks for daylight savings time detrimental to our health? I'm going to be discussing the topic with Dr. Annie Curtis, and the hilarious Dirt Birds give their honest account of parenting. So what kind of health and wellness week did I have? Well, it started with a few days away with the girls, lounging in the sun, chatting, laughing, reading. Definitely one of the best health and wellness endeavours that I've had in recent times. And yesterday I was at the Great Pink Run in the Phoenix Park in Dublin. So well done to all involved. And good luck to anyone taking part in Kilkenny this morning. I think it kicks off in about an hour from Kilkenny Castle Park. And our own Kieran Cuddihy will be leading out the sea of pink. And there's just a really good feeling at the event. I met with Anne Ebel. She has survived two bouts of cancer, septicemia, and there she was emblazoned in pink and glitter as a volunteer. And there's just so many stories like that. I was there alongside Georgie Crawford. She is also a cancer survivor with her hubby there. And also Dr. Arnie Hill, who was her surgeon. And literally 2 years previous to the day yesterday, he had been in surgery with her. So there they were, side by side, about to run the 10K. And I mean, Georgie and Anne are just two stories. And I know there were so many other people running with stories like that, or, you know, to support friends or relatives who had gone through it, or just because, I mean, everyone's touched in one way through cancer. Just to want to support Breast Cancer Ireland in research, because we've come so far with cancer, and it's events like that that make all the difference. And it was just a really fun, positive day. So thank you very much for having me, and well done to all involved. Now, last week I mentioned that I have not embraced meditation in the way I had promised. And I'm not sure I righted that wrong this week, but I did have a lot of texts and emails about it. I had talked about not wanting to have that long, hard look at myself through meditation. And Una sent an email. I'll give you a couple of them. She said, can I just say, you don't have to go delving deep into anything. All you have to do is sit and observe your breathing. You can follow your breathing in your mind, noticing just breathing in through the nose and out through the mouth, and notice the way your stomach rises and falls with each intake of breath. It's simple. This gives your brain a rest, and that's where the benefits are. And that does take it down a notch or two. I just always think that while you're doing that, all sorts of stuff will come up. And I'm making it sound like I've gone through all sorts that I'm trying to shove down. I haven't. I just don't know what it is. Same for Peter. He says, similarly, forget 20 minutes. That's expert level. It's very hard to do, or to even be able to find the time if you have a family. Just do 1 to 2 minutes in the car before going to work, before you turn on the ignition, and when you're on your own or wherever, you get a minute's peace. Build it up slowly to maybe 5 minutes. This could take months. No rush. That's all you need. Well, thank you very much for that, Peter. I think I will give that a go. Now, I'm also reading for Well Read, where we review health and wellness books, Gabriella Bernstein, The Universe Has Your Back. Now, I'm not going to lie, it's a bit out there. I'll save the full review for next week when Andrea Hayes and David Gillick are here. But there is a lot of talk of meditation in it, and setting an intention and doing a specific meditation. And she has them for free on her website. So I'm going to complete them this week before the review next week. But I will just try that little sit in the car before I go to sleep, just a few minutes of the breathing, and you'll probably have a new and more improved me by next Sunday. But thank you to everyone who got in touch about that. You can also text the show 53106 at a cost of 30 cents, or you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. So the clocks go back on the 27th, and while many will look at this as an extra hour in bed, does it have any kind of a negative impact on our health? Because there have been campaigns to do away with daylight savings time altogether. Well, to tell us more is Dr. Annie Curtis. You may remember we had her on previously about our body clock. She's a lecturer from the Department of Molecular and Cellular Therapeutics at the Royal College of Surgeons. Welcome back, Annie.
Oh, thanks very much, Claire.
And there is a lot of people who campaign to do away with this altogether. So why do we do it in the first place?
Yeah, so it was brought in, I think, after the World War One, and the idea was that it would actually save energy. And that is no longer true today. So that reason for having daylight savings time is no longer valid. So there's no energy savings. Now, of course, yes, having daylight savings time, you do get longer days. So, you know, it's bright more in the evening time. But there's a big campaign now to eliminate daylight savings time. So there's actually sort of two things we need to consider. There's, should we eliminate daylight savings time? And I would say, absolutely. So we should. And the European government have brought in a proposal. So they want by, I think it's March 2021, that will be the last time that we switch the clocks. OK, so they brought in that. And then there was a public consultation in Ireland and in the rest of Europe as well. But in Ireland, I think it happened in maybe November 2018. And the results came out during the summer. So the Irish people voted overwhelmingly to abolish daylight savings time. 80% are in favour of abolishing it and 20% are not. And that kind of is in keeping with the rest of Europe. So there was a consultation in Europe as well. Now, mind you, in Europe, the Germans, there was a massive amount of Germans who voted for this. So really, this is the voice of Germany. And Germany as well want to abolish daylight savings time. So we need to abolish it. And there's reasons for that, if you want me to go into that.
But when you say originally it came in after the World War One, is you were saying it was to save energy, but was that because we were farming more? We didn't have the same amount of electricity as we do now? Is that why times have changed after the Industrial Revolution?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's why, you know, in terms of like our energy grid and how we can conserve energy and use it at different times. Yeah, so that's no longer valid. But there's a real health cost to daylight savings time. And what we know is, and it's a little bit complicated, but I'll try to make it really simple.
Okay.
We have to think about three clocks. There's three clocks that we need to consider. There's the sun clock. Okay. So that is like where in the sky the sun is. Okay. There's our body clock, which is what I research. And that is our internal clock. And basically we have a clock inside us and it ticks away and it determines the time that we wake up in the morning, when we feel sleepy, all of that. It also determines like our bodily functions. So we are more alert during daylight hours. There's no question about that. That's why most accidents happen in the nighttime. You know, our digestive system is more active during the day and our body clock is controlling all that. Body clock's all about when certain things happen. So that's the second clock. Then the third clock then is the clock on the wall. So it's the just time that when you look at your watch and it says X, you know, X hours or whatever. The key thing is that our clock, our body clock, is completely aligned with the sun clock. It takes all its signals from the sun clock. Mm-hmm. Claire, it doesn't give a damn what the clock on the wall says. It's completely aligned with our natural environment, with the sun, right?
So when it's bright, we're more active. When it's dark, we're not.
Exactly. So, and that's why you get jet lag. Because, you know, when you go over to New York, okay, it may say 2 p.m. in the afternoon, but your body clock is still at 7 p.m., let's say.
Even though you might be in daylight or under the sun, as it were.
Yeah, it takes a while for it to reset. So and that's why, because our body clocks will align in time with the sun, right? It doesn't give a damn the time
okay.
that it says on the wall.
Okay, and you kind of have it set. So when the clocks go forward an hour in spring or go back in the autumn, what effect does that have on our body? Because we would think it's only an hour.
Yeah, no, an hour actually has a big effect on our body clocks. So what happens is during normal time, okay, so not daylight savings time, so the time not, well, let's say October to March, our clock on the wall and our body clock and our sun clock are completely aligned with each other, right? So when it is midday on the clock on the wall, it's actually the sun is at its highest point here. Okay, and because our body clocks follow the sun clock, all three are aligned. The problem is with daylight savings time is that we then shift the clocks an hour, right? So we spring forward. And what that means is that our body clock and sun clock, when it's at 12 noon, the clock on the wall is saying 1 p.m. There's a misalignment here between our body clocks and the clock on the wall. But the clock on the wall is what determines all our social activities, you know, like all our behaviours. So there's a real mismatch. And remarkably, and I think, Claire, this is mind-blowing, remarkably, when we switch to daylight savings time, there's a 40% increase in cardiovascular events.
What?
Yeah. Like, isn't that just incredible? Now, there's probably two components of that. One is sleep deprivation, because we lose an hour of sleep. And I can tell you now, Claire, if we're thinking about health and well-being, and I think you know this, sleep is medicine. Sleep and exercise are medicine. Sleep is a massive, massive medicine. So there's a bit of a sleep deprivation there. But at the same time, there's this misalignment that's happening. So, you know, we all should tread very carefully the Monday after the clocks go forward, because that's when there's a real peak in cardiovascular events. There's a peak in cardiovascular events anyway in the morning. We're more susceptible to cardiovascular events first thing in the morning, and that's because of our body clock. And there's lots of reasons why that is. But there's even an increase in susceptibility when we shift the clocks. But and what we think is what's happening is that adverse events, and there's more adverse events. There's problems with concentration. There's problems with health and well-being when we switch to daylight savings time. We believe that that stays throughout the whole of daylight savings time. So it's that risk is there. You know that those adverse events are there
until the autumn.
Because remarkably, when we switch back, guess what happens in terms of cardiovascular events?
They go back down.
There's a reduction in cardiovascular events when we fall back.
So all the campaigns that are ongoing at the moment and the proposal is to stay with the time that we go to in October.
So the proposal is, first of all, should we abolish daylight savings time?
Which means we would never spring forward.
We would never spring forward. Well, it's first of all, should we abolish it? Right. And then the second thing is, which time should we stay on? Should we stay on normal time, which is like winter time? But I don't like to say winter time. And you'll see why. Is normal time or daylight savings time? That's the second question. So first of all, for sure, if we think about the our health, we should abolish daylight savings time.
But did you not already say that when we are in one particular time, we are in full alignment with the sun clock, the clock on the wall and our body clock?
Claire,
should we not stay in that one?
Exactly. And what time is that? That is what we now call winter time.
Okay.
That's what we should stay on.
Okay, that's the fallback.
That's the fallback. That's our time when we're, that's the time that we're in from the last, you know, when we switch in October until the end of March.
But with the axis of the earth, in the winter time, you have dark mornings and darker evenings. Is that always going to be the case with or without daylight savings time because of the time of year and the position of the sun?
That's exactly that. There's a bit of a misconception out there, Claire. And I can understand why, because I'll be honest with you, I'm only after getting a handle on the spring forward fall back myself, you know, over the last couple of years.
I know, we never call it fall at any other time.
Yeah. We welcome the fall. So there's this misconception that daylight savings time makes the evenings longer, right? But I think if we think about it, that's not the case. It is as it is. There's a certain amount of daylight, you know, during the summer months. And there's a certain amount of daylight during the winter months. So, you know, during the summer months, just because of where we are on the latitude, we get 17 hours of sunlight, you know, at the midpoint. So the solstice, let's say. And then during the winter time, there's only about 6 or 7 hours of light there. Mm. So it's not like daylight savings time makes the evenings brighter. It's just how we set the clock on the wall.
Yeah. And that's that nature is doing it anyway. Till you're saying March 2021, we are going to be still living with this change. So with the one that's coming on October 27th, the clock's going back an hour. What's your advice to people on how to handle this? But this is more positive on your body than in springtime.
It is. So this is an easier one for us to adjust to in November. And the reason for that is because again, we're coming back into alignment. Our body, our sun and the clock on the wall, they're all coming into alignment again. So that it's easier for us in terms of our health. And actually, as I said, that increase in cardiovascular risk, that actually decreases during this time, which I just think that's incredible that we actually see it. It really shows that we are, you know, creatures of this earth and we have to live in harmony with our natural environment. And we know we can't get away from that. I think in modern society, we think we can kind of divorce ourselves from this biology. But this is our biology. This has been going on for like 3 billion years.
Yeah,
we can't get away from this.
Evolution takes a long time. I mean, that clock ticks slowly.
Yes, yes. And remarkably, Claire, this is another thing that I found out, that the earth is actually spinning a little slower as we go along. So, you know, 3 billion years ago, it took 22 hours for the earth to do a full rotation. And now it's taking 24. It actually slows down by 1 millisecond every 50 years.
Wow.
I hope I have that right.
Another fascinating fact.
I know.
So this one isn't going to affect us as much. We just go with the flow, take the extra hour in bed and not worry about it. But if you're asked to vote...
So I don't know what's going to happen now because, so we had this public consultation and that was, you know, enormously for abolishing daylight savings time. But since then, the government have come out, I think it's Charlie Flanagan, has come out and said, we are not going to be in a different time zone to the UK. And I think most people wouldn't want that either. The UK don't want to abolish daylight savings time. So I think... And I think Charlie Flanagan's stance and the government's stance on this is, well, we can't be in a different time zone to the UK. What I would say to this shouldn't be a political matter. This should be a health issue. And in reality, I think, you know, the UK could do us a favour and go with us on this.
I don't know if you've heard of a little thing called Brexit, Annie.
Well, I think, you know, given the fact that we've all been dragged through Brexit, I think
Give us daylight savings. Fair enough. Fascinating talking to you as always. Dr. Annie Curtis is a lecturer from the Department of Molecular and Cellular Therapeutics at the Royal College of Surgeons. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks, Claire.
And do let me know your thoughts on that, whether you'd be joining the campaign to get rid of daylight savings time altogether. And I asked earlier for you to text in how you're feeling, and Alan in Carlow says, feeling amazing after a 5k run before heading away for a few nights before getting a year closer to the big 40. Well, Alan, I like that. And I saw Rich Roll, he is an elite athlete and has a good health and wellness podcast if you're interested. He says, I didn't reach my athletic peak until I was 43, didn't write my first book till I was 44, didn't start my podcast till I was 45. At 30, I thought my life was over. At 52, I know it's only just beginning. Keep running, never give up, and watch your kite soar. That's for you, Alan. Coming up, the hilarious Dirtbirds give their honest account of parenting.
Alive and kicking on News Talk.
Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
So Sudocrem did a survey recently about parenting, and I'll give you just one of the statistics. Over a third of parents claim that posts that portray perfect parenting on social media generally makes them feel worse. So to discuss parenting, I'm joined now by the Dirtbirds, Sinead Culbert and Sue Collins.
Hello. Hiya, Claire.
And if for any moment you wondered, is parenting really about health and wellness? Well, it is, because by God, does it affect your health. And it's possibly one of the biggest science experiments I think you'll ever take part in, because you make humans and then you keep them alive.
Yes.
It's incredible. And the Dirtbirds are experts on this, being parents themselves, and their comedy sketches on YouTube have been watched by thousands. And in it, you do tend to tackle the topic of parenting a lot.
I think we do. Yeah. I mean, I have 4 kids. So I had 4 under 4 at one point.
I've 19 kids. I'm just...
She won't let me trump her on that one.
She always trumps me on that. Yeah,
yeah, so you have 4
We've
kids.
We've 6 between us, and she
needs
2.
No, I've got 2.
Yeah.
I can't complain about anything, because she just looks at me and goes, I have 4. And that just shuts me in my tracks.
But you did that of your own free will.
Yeah,
Sue.
People use... Well, I didn't plan the twins.
Hear, Claire,
I didn't plan the twins.
You went for 3 and got 4.
Went for 3 and got 4.
That's
still
what you
fight. They're still fighting over which one was planned and which one was unplanned. But... I'm the planned one. No, you're not. I'm planned. They didn't want you. And I go, you're both mistakes. It's all right.
But we are where we are.
No, people used to come up to us, actually, myself and my husband, and say, sorry, I've got a bit of laryngitis. That's just from shouting at the kids. They used to come up to us and say, are they all yours? Are they all your kids? You know what I mean? Regularly. I was in a hotel one morning and they came up. This woman came up to, I have to ask you, are they four high chairs? Are they all yours? And I said, can you not tell by the porridge that's matted into my hair, the stains all down my tracksuit, and the fact that I'm pouring gin into my cornflakes? So it was a bit of a stressful time. Yeah, we wanted to get T-shirts printed up saying, yes, we have our hands full. Because that was the other thing you got.
That's hilarious, because my friend has four and she said even her own kids were saying, why do they keep saying you have your hands full, Mom?
You've got your hands full there.
And then they don't help you.
They don't help you.
They watch you from a distance.
Yeah, you'd be trying to get out a double door with a double buggy and two toddlers hanging off the side of it. And it's usually a man.
She didn't say that. She didn't say that.
No, I'm only joking. With his hands in his pockets going, you have your hands full there, don't you? Yeah, that's a cue for you to come and actually hold the door open for me.
Give us a hand.
It was blur. They're a bit older now, so.
So at what point, ladies, did you start turning this time in people's lives into humour?
Well, actually, we were asked by Suda Krem to go on this hashtag Real Parenting panel because they had seen the sketches, and for us, we started putting up sketches just kind of laughing at the struggles, you know, that we have ourselves, you know what I mean? One of them was called Rare Moments of Joy in a Mother's Life. And it's just basically like little moments. For example, someone offers to take your kids in a sleepover, or the kids come home and say they've no homework. And we just kind of did this sort of slow-mo thing in these moments to the music of Chariots of Fire.
The days you don't have to cook dinner.
You don't have to cook dinner.
And you don't think you'll ever get excited about things like that, and yet you do.
These are the things that make your life.
When your husband goes, I'll put them to bed tonight, you stay where you are.
Yeah.
Just that tiny moment of utter.
It's like winning the lotto.
Joy.
It's just.
So it was in slow-mo when you heard the little, you know, the little thing that you were getting and to Chariots of Fire. So that was kind of, that was one of them.
It's for us, we were saying on the Suda Krem thing that some of the research said that what people found challenging was 52% found that they didn't sleep. They never slept properly again after that. And we were laughing at that because I have two kids. I have a little girl, she's 10, and a little boy now, he's 7. But literally, my little girl came into the world, I don't know if you're the same, and she was beautiful, very cute, but awake 24/7. She just never slept. Mm. She was just sitting there, very happy and alert. I love that word, alert. I never hated a word as much. But she's very alert, isn't she? I was like, oh no!
For how many years?
So for about the first 2 years, honest to God, I was breastfeeding her, so I'd go to bed and an hour and a half later, she'd wake up, I'd wake up, I'd feed her. My husband didn't wake up, of course, because he didn't hear her. And then I put her back down. An hour and a half later, she'd wake up, I'd wake up. He still wouldn't wake up. And I was saying to Sue, I'd come down in the morning and the thing that used to send me over the edge was he'd be sitting there, my husband. I love him, I swear. He'd be sitting there all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and he'd just say that sentence that had sent me over the edge. He'd go, you know, it's great, isn't it? He's from Holland. He'd go, it's great, isn't it? That she's sleeping through the night now? It's really great, isn't it?
Oh,
I was saying to Sue, I took up boxing lessons after that.
It would have been worse if he said he was tired.
Oh, yeah.
That would
have
actually
hurt. Yeah, I suppose. I suppose. But he was thrilled. He was literally going, it's fantastic, whispering. It's fantastic, isn't it? She has not woken up at all.
Oh, look, I caught my husband telling people whose wives were pregnant, go for the breastfeeding. I'm telling you, it's deadly. Yes,
it
openly.
Is deadly. It's
openly.
Deadly.
What about what I said there about perfect parenting?
Oh, yeah.
Why don't we stop that? Why do we kind of give off this image? Why are we not all talking honestly about our struggles? You girls are.
I think we are in the sketches, and we do like to, I think as comedians, we write about what we know.
Yeah.
And so we do, look, we've no problem with people posting stuff with their kids on social media, whatever. It's their choice. It's absolutely fine. But I often wonder, you know, hashtag family day out, like how long did it take to get the actual photograph? Do you know what I mean? I just had images of the kids there going, can I eat my burger now, mommy? I'm starving. No, hang on a second. I've only got 8 photographs. I need 800 to get the right one. And you're going, how? Because we all know how hard it is to get the perfect photo.
Exactly.
So where does it become a fun day? And then, you know what I mean?
I saw a picture. I just have to come in there. It was actually a little video edit. It nearly sent me over the edge because I was looking at, again, the statistics. It says 45% of people go a bit, they get very angry when they see this perfect family day. And I remember I was telling Sue, I saw this. edited video clip of a birthday party. Now, I'd been at the birthday party. Do you know what I mean? It was nothing. First of all, it was nothing like the edited video clip.
Eyewitness account.
But it was to music and everything. It must have taken them like days to produce it. It was a production. And it was all, because I'm happy, live along.
Oh, God.
And the mother looked fabulous. And the child was blowing out the candles. And it looked like the best. It was like a celebrity birthday party. And I said to Sue, I would have loved to have seen the footage like an hour before the party. Do you know what I mean? With the mother going, John, get down and help me.
Yeah.
You know, the house is a kip. They're going to be here in an hour. And yeah. The dog eating the birthday cake or something.
And it's
you know?
The same. It's the same with, you know, any kind of day out that you have. You know, obviously there can be a nice time in the park when you finally get there at the zoo. And that's the picture you post. But
yes.
There's been so many days out where I've been crying behind my sunglasses. Because
laughing to
the plan I had in my head.
They're
kicking off. No one wants to go to the zoo. Everyone's fighting. It starts to rain.
Yes.
We're all narking at each other. But you don't put that on social media.
No. And I think it's really important as well just to kind of get together. That's why the Real Parenting Panel was a lovely morning with Sue de Crème. It was held in Café on Seine. It was a great morning.
Yeah, it was lovely.
And
it was really
lovely
great.
Because it was like saying, we're all in this together. It's not easy. Would you just stop? You know, it's really, really hard. Like, I remember like being at a christening and this couple were there and they had three kids and I was introduced to them and we got chatting or whatever. And they were sort of saying, no, we never row and our kids never row.
And
I just, because at that stage I had 4 under 5, you know what I mean? I was dealing with sibling rivalry all the time and, you know, and wading through it and everything. I just felt like saying, I'll take out the lie detector now out of my handbag. Would you like to see how we get on? Because you're kind of going, really? Really? So it's really great to say, I had the worst. Oh, it's just, this is so hard. And I think there is this pressure to be perfect. You know what I mean? For women, I think Dirtbird's brand does, or what we do, and we liked really, and it's in our live show as well. We're in Vicar Street on the 24th of January.
I was just about to say, I feel a plug coming on there.
Yes.
It's our live show. We're in Vicar Street on the 24th of January.
Get me out of the house and away from the mammy roll. I'm all for it.
So we're very excited about that one. But you know, it's kind of going. You know, I think we're all sort of you know. In the dark, we're doing it day. But I have teenagers now, so that's another.
But
another
your parenting is only doing what you as a person think is right, or you're either doing exactly what your parents did, or you're doing exactly the opposite of what your parents did.
Yeah.
You know, so nobody knows what they're doing right or wrong. But I do think that social media kind of gives the impression that lots of people are doing it amazingly well.
Are
fantastic.
Better
They're better.
You.
They're amazing.
But there is the other stat from the survey that says almost half of parents claim they've been infuriated or annoyed by other parents moaning or being negative. So we want the truth, but we don't want eternal moaning either about how hard it all is. So what do we do?
There's a balance.
I think, you know, I think having a joke about it, making a joke about things that go wrong, you know, putting up a funny picture. I'm not suggesting everybody turns into a comedian, but you know what I mean? Taking yourself lightly. I mean, I have seen people, as Sue said, like some of the photographs are incredibly orchestrated. Like, you know, it's, you're kind of looking at it going, Jesus, that must have taken you 3 hours of getting it right. Do you know what I mean? And you just wonder for who and for what. So I think, And if you're having a great family day, do you really have the time?
I did listen to a podcast recently with this guy, Alain de Botton, is his name, and he did French philosophy in Harvard. He runs the Life School Academy, and he's just a very smart guy. And he says that we focus too much in all areas of our life on perfectionism and
completely.
Being perfect. And this idea that you can be whatever you want to be leaves some people like they've failed if they've got an ordinary life. And he says parenting is one of the worst places where we look to be perfect.
Yeah.
And kids don't need a perfect parent. They just need a parent
stability
to be good enough.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we don't know. We don't get that message out enough because you beat yourself up so much as a parent.
Sure. I was saying to Sue, I remember when I had my first little girl and she went into junior infants, fantastic school she's in. And we were given Bobby Bear. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but you're given a bear to take home.
Okay.
And then you've got this copy and you have to write what you did and take photographs of you with Bobby Bear. So she was like child number 3 or something to get it. So the 3 parents before me had like, you know, Bobby Bear was in Tato Park. Bobby Bear was in the, you know what I mean, the Guinness Brewery. Bobby Bear was having the crack all over the place. And I just had my second child and I'd had a cesarean section and I looked morbidly obese, God love me, and I was breastfeeding and I was wrecked. And so I was housebound. So
Bobby Bear watch telly?
Bobby Bear was in loads of photographs with me looking like, you know, clinically depressed, sitting beside him. Bobby Bear with Mammy in the kitchen. Bobby Bear with Mammy crying in the sitting room. But as I said to Sue, which really made me laugh, I was glad I was parent number three, because by the time that year had finished, Bobby Bear was skiing down the Alps and everything.
He
was
in Switzerland.
Bobby Bear in 5-star hotel in Switzerland. It was absolutely... But the pressure parents felt... It's hard.
What do you think then, if I can ask both of you, for you, is the best and the worst part of parenting? Sue, you first.
Ooh, the best and the worst. Well, the best is, I was just saying to Sinead, like, the best is, I suppose, the stuff they say, because they're at, mine are 11, or 13 and 14. So the 11-year-old twins are just this fantastic age. They still have that lovely innocence, and yet they're sort of slightly going into the tween phase, you know. But this was a couple of years ago. It's just the stuff that they make me laugh. I think that's kind of, but it was a few years ago. Shawnee was only about 8 and we were, my husband said, we're going to do something cultural today. We're all going to the gallery to see Leonardo da Vinci's drawings, rare drawings. And we are all going. And of course they walked around going, I'm so bored, get me out of here. And we went for lunch afterwards. So they were delighted with their sausage and chips and everything else afterwards. And my husband said, so did you enjoy that? Wasn't it wonderful? And Shawnee went, it was a bit boring. And he went, but Shawnee, it was a beautiful, fabulous to see these drawings. They were kept for 500 years. And he just looked up from his chips and he went, really? Oh, wow, that's amazing. If I draw a picture in the morning in school, it's in the bin by lunchtime.
Yeah, it is. That is one of the best. And I suppose we've spoken about how hard it all is. For you then, what is the best, Sinead?
So the best for me would be, yeah, to see them. Some of the research was about seeing them growing and developing and all the rest. So for me, that's just that. They're doing well in school. They seem very happy. I was telling Sue there, I was at a parent-teacher meeting and the teacher just sat down and said, yeah, you know, she's doing very well. I suppose just keep doing whatever you're doing. And I literally burst into tears. I was going, what? Can you say that again? And she was going, well, just, I'd say it's just a line she says to everybody, but she was going, just keep doing what you're doing. And I was going, I was going, can you say that into the dictaphone there? Keep doing what you're doing.
I'm so going to make it into my ringtone.
I'm going to, and every exactly. time the kids give me an earful, I go, sorry, your teacher said, I'm to keep doing whatever I'm doing.
Well, Derpirds, I'm going to say the same. Keep doing what you're doing. It's very funny. Vicar Street, really... January 24th.
And sorry, another shameless plug. We have a book coming out as well.
Shameless. Ooh. She's shameless.
We're told
it's for all parents.
Derpirds Self-Help Guide. It's launching on the 29th of this month.
Yes.
And it's all the advice for those women of Ireland who are hanging by a thread.
Yeah, kids are no
kids. It's a must read.
It's basically a parody of self-help book, but the whole idea of it is it's an antidote to that insta-perfect life you were talking about.
Amazing. Look forward to it. Sinead Culbert and Sue Collins, the Derpirds.
Thank you very much.
Alive and kicking on Newstalk.
Thanks to ReproMed, IVF and fertility experts with clinics nationwide. Begin your fertility journey at ReproMed.ie.
And you can text the show 53106 at a cost of 30 cent. So the Irish were beaten by the All Blacks and chances are it wasn't because one team ate better than the other. But at professional and elite level sports, people have a very well-honed nutritional plan. And Daniel Davey is the performance nutritionist for the Dublin Senior Footballers and Leinster Rugby. And he says anyone can feel and perform better with the right food choices. And he joins me in studio now to discuss his new book, Eat Up, Raise Your Game. Well, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And I suppose we wonder a lot about, you know, elite sports people and how they're different to us. But you feel that they're not really, that when it comes to the right training and the combination of that with the right nutritional choices, pretty much anyone can do it.
There's no question you can. I suppose what really distinguishes people who are in an elite environment from the regular public or people who are socially recreationally active is structure and routine. And what elite athletes have is they have a plan, like you said, they have really good structure and they know what their days look like. So from a training point of view, from a mental skills point of view and from a lifestyle nutrition point of view, they have that structure. And I think this is what is really important for anybody who wants to be a bit healthier. They need to bring that level, some level of structure to their eating.
And when did you make the link between performance and nutrition?
That actually goes way back. I was asking my grandmother about, from her perspective, what she thought was important to eat to be stronger and to grow. And then I was looking at older boys and people in the locality who were performing really well as sports people, and I wanted to know what they ate. So I did connect nutrition with performing well from a very young age.
And you're from a farming background in Sligo. So, you know, you're very much connected with the land and taking from the land and eating local. That's just ingrained in you.
It really is. So there's a very strong, there's a strong ritual of eating the right type of foods. We had very strong values from, you know, from my grandparents and from my parents' point of view. We were always encouraged to eat nourishing food. I was always a part of the family dinners, whether it be peeling the potatoes, from a very young age. And my mother gave me the, not just the encouragement, but she gave me the skills to say, okay, now you can look after yourself. So if we're hungry growing up, my mother said, well, you know well where the pots and pans are, go, away you go.
Now, in the book, you say preparation is key and that you just have to be ready for this book or ready for this change. And people are on this busy buzz. Busy is just what we all strive to be. And that's why convenience, especially in food, wins over. So how do you flick that switch and actually start batch cooking on a Sunday?
Well, that's nicely framed, because the preparation element is massively overtalked, and it's almost become like this cliche within sports, within nutrition and sports nutrition. Preparation is really important, but it doesn't have to be something where you spend hours in the kitchen. It can be as simple as making overnight oats for a Monday morning and you start there. It can be as simple as making porridge bread or homemade bread over the course of an hour on a Sunday or a Saturday. And like I said, just start there. I think where the problem arises is where we think that we need to prepare all of our meals for 2 or 3 days at a time. We do that once, we think that's too much work, and then we never do it again. And the same can be applied to exercise. We expect way too much of ourselves, whereas these type of things must be built on in over the course of time. So where do you flick the switch? You start small, and it's critical that you are at a phase or a time or a mindset where you're saying, now I'm ready to give this a go. I'm ready to say, this is something that I'm going to commit to. And then you create, like we mentioned, you create the plan, but you also create accountability. So making the connection to other people who are on the same type of journey is very important.
And is it the combination of good nutrition with exercise also essential? Because if you're eating very well, but you're not in a calorie deficit, will you be missing out on the benefits? Likewise, if you're training a lot and not fueling your body correctly, that's also not going to give you optimum results.
Well, I talk about the pillars of performance over and over and over again, because that is the framework within an elite environment that leads to success, that leads to these, you know, physiques, really good levels of performance. So what are they? They are exercise, they are nutrition, lifestyle, mental skills and sleep. They all fit together. And if you aren't investing in each one of those areas, then you won't be well mentally or physically. So yes, exercise is absolutely critical. And I guess within the book, within the framework, within the book, I talk about exercise days and rest days, and everybody really should apply those type of principles. What we often see is that even athletes, they don't align their nutrient levels or their carbohydrate or their calories to days they're active and rest days. They tend to eat the same quite continuously. And I see that a lot. Whereas, you know, you've got people who are in the office and then they're, you know, they might be training in the morning or not training. And that's important to have that kind of, again, structure in your eating.
It is very scientific how your book delves into it. I'm really interested in that. You talk about the calories, the macronutrients, food composition, food timing and supplements, and go into real detail in that. At what point does it switch from being scientific to just being a way of life?
Well, that's what I work really, really hard to do. I try and ground all of my nutrition within scientific evidence, and then I try and make it really simple. And to be honest with you, although there is a strong science framework, you can just skip on to the recipes and choose recipes that you want to cook for your family or for yourself, or like we said, it can just be easy food prep. So for me, what distinguishes me is not that I'm this amazing chef. I can place food within the context of exercise and nutrition, or exercise and science. And that's what I try and bring. I try and talk about science in very, very simple terms, but it's always through food. So when I'm talking to athletes about preparation for a game, or even athletes who are preparing for a marathon, which, you know, obviously it's marathon season, it's about how many potatoes, it's about how many eggs for protein. And it's in those type of simple, in that simple language, that's really important for people to understand.
You mentioned protein there. Is there a place for veggies and vegans when it comes to building muscle? Do you have any veggies or vegans on the Dublin senior football team or in Leinster rugby? Do you think you can build muscle without meat?
I'm not just saying that. That's a brilliant, brilliant question, because I wasn't sure myself. And I'm just finishing a postgrad at the moment, and I did my thesis or case study on an athlete who converted to vegan, and they reached almost personal best standards of lean mass, which we look at through DEXA scanning. So it's a way of measuring fat mass and lean mass. And this athlete, over an 8-week period, attained the highest level of lean mass that he had achieved over 2 years. And his performance levels were consistently high, or at his best, over the course of the entire season. So he this year converted to being a vegan athlete, vegan eating, or to being a vegan, and performed and excelled.
Wow, we really are at a tipping point in the way we eat, aren't we? Your page on portion control is like shocking. It's just very simple pictures of your hand and how your hand should indicate how much you should be eating of anything, and it's your thumb size a day of fats. And when I think about how much avocado or peanut butter I spread on a piece of toast, it's more than a thumb. Do you think we need to re-educate ourselves in how much of each thing we should be eating?
Well, here's a really important point. Those are just guidelines. So when you talk about eating more avocado than that, or more peanut butter than that, then that's absolutely fine, as long as it's within your need for calories. I think what we often don't understand is what our actual needs are. And I think we also don't understand how little energy we expend when we're exercising. So that's another thing where we just need to get the balance right again. Mm. And those are just simple guidelines or simple frameworks. So, you know, healthy fats can absolutely make up a large contribution to energy, as long as we're in that balance. But I do think that there is a little bit of re-education required. And I think that there's enough information out there. We've got apps everywhere. We've got lots of resources online. And like you said, we've got simple little insights through using our hands as measures for portions. I think often what's happening is that we're mindless with how we approach our food. And that's where the mindful eating is so critical.
It sometimes feels like a mountain to overcome to take all of this on, but the emphasis should be on how it'll make you feel. So if you do look after those pillars you mentioned that do include this kind of nutrition, how will you feel?
Well, I work with athletes and non-athletes, and I always say this to every single person who I meet for the first time. I say, if you get these pillars right, you will never go back. You will never go back to just off the cuff eating or not exercising because of how well you feel physically and mentally.
Well, I look forward to joining the Dublin senior football team as soon as I cook up some of these recipes. It is a gorgeous book. It's called Eat Up, Raise Your Game. Daniel Davey, thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me.
We are out of time again. My thanks to my producer, John Fardy, researcher Elaine Power, and Jojo Cordoza was on sound. Vincent Wall is up next. Thank you for listening.